preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do.
Welcome to the show, folks. This is the Trump Phenomenon Radio Show. James Kelso, your host here, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. You're on the Republic Broadcasting Network, which you can support by going to republicbroadcasting.org. And you can find which way is most convenient for you to support. You can buy some products. You can contribute directly to the station. Well, station, wrong word. Network of stations and various ways of getting the message out. It's created by John Stadtmiller, lo these many years ago, and John Stadtmiller is looking down on us from heaven, quite pleased, I'm sure, that his network is thriving. Thanks to you. So here we go with all things Trump here on April 10th, 2024. Boy, the clock is ticking, is it not? Ooh-wee. Well, let's start right out with the orange man himself. I don't know why. You know, one of the nicknames for Donald Trump is the orange man. I don't know exactly why we call him the orange man. I love the name. But he's... He's all of the things that we, all of the terms of endearment that we have for Donald John Trump. So let's hear him right off the bat here on tonight's show, because this is something he put up 1 hour ago for your and my edification. And I'm listening to this particular video for the first time. So let us listen. The president is standing here at, I'm not sure what the set is. I presume it's at Mar-a-Lago, and it's in front of one of his favorite paintings on the wall, in front of over a fireplace with American flags bookending the painting. And he's in his classic blue suit, really white shirt, and a beautiful red tie.
In Michigan, radical left Democrat Governor Gretchen Whitmer is handing out $500 a month in cash to anyone who accepts illegal aliens into your homes. Isn't that nice? She's calling the scam the newcomer rental subsidy. In other words, she's calling illegal immigrants, many coming from jails, many coming from mental institutions, many are terrorists. She's calling them newcomers. Isn't that wonderful? And it's all funded by federal taxpayer dollars distributed by crooked Joe Biden. He's the most crooked president we've ever had, and he's by far the worst.
Don't you love that? Isn't that wonderful? Gretchen Whitmer, this lady who looks best in tight leather, and you imagine a whip in her hand. A dominatrix, if I ever saw one. Gretchen Whitmer handing out your money, $500 a month, to take a newcomer. This is an invader with absolutely no background check, absolutely no, we know nothing about these invaders. But you can get, you can pick up $500 a month. Boy, talk about bribery and talk about extortion of us. Where she get, where are you getting your money, Gretchen? Are you using the whip? Is that, that what you, yeah, it is. That's what she's using. She's getting that money with her whip. Power of government. That's all government is. Naked power. That's what government is. And that's why the founders of America resolved to chain, tie down with chains the power of government. They understood the evil inherent in power over other people of that scope. The higher, and the higher you go, the worse it gets. Well, let's listen to the president some more here. I love his, what did he call it? He said, isn't that wonderful?
Worst president we've ever had. In other words, Biden and Whitmer are selecting and stealing your money to give free housing to illegal alien migrants and then asking you to quarter these foreign armies, and that's what they are, they're armies. They're coming in at levels that we've never seen ever in our country before. But quarter these foreign armies in the spare bedroom that you happen to have next to your children. I don't know. Somehow it doesn't sound like a very good idea, considering many of these people came from prisons and jails. They came from mental institutions and insane asylums. Many are terrorists that are coming into our country.
Yeah, it doesn't sound. I love the president's. I love the president's delivery of this. Doesn't sound like a good idea putting these invaders, these felons. They, their first act upon crossing the American border was the felony of invading America. They started out with a nice big fat felony. And now you're going to put them next to your children's bedrooms for $500 a month. Wow.
Totally unchecked, totally unvetted. Doesn't sound like a good idea to have them next to your children, but that's Biden for you. Biden, Whitmer, and the radical left Democrats care more about illegal aliens than about American citizens or our military, our vets. They care much more about illegal aliens. Thanks to their inflation disaster, you can't afford to buy a house. You can't afford the increase in rent. Yet they're taking your money and giving it to so-called newcomers. It's such a nice name. Who illegally charged across our border. They came in illegally into our country. They're called newcomers. They're not called illegal immigrants. They're not called illegal aliens. This is a scandal, and this is a disgusting insult to hardworking American taxpayers. I will end it on day one. And when I take the oath of office, America is going to be strong, powerful, and rich again. When I'm president, instead of asking you to cram illegal aliens into your homes, I'll tell the illegal aliens that they must not come into our country. They have to go back to their homes in their countries. One way or another, we will send them back to their own countries. We will have the largest and most efficient deportation effort in the history of our country, bigger than that of Dwight Eisenhower, our president from a long time ago. Thank you very much.
Beautiful. Beautiful. What a way to start out this Wednesday on a high note there. Beautiful, President Trump. And, you know, just think about it for a moment. You know, the absurdity of our times. We are living in the middle of insanity. Imagine, of course, everyone's lying. As Tucker Carlson observed years ago, he said, one thing we know about our government is they're, all of them are lying all of the time about everything. And there are exceptions like Marjorie Taylor Greene, but these are the exceptions of the ones that came from outside of government. She came from her father's construction company, which became hers. Donald Trump came from his real estate and development empire. But those who have been sucking on the tit of government for their entire lives, from the time they were, you know, graduate students or lawyers or, you know, in law school, you look at the trajectory, there's so many of these government parasites who never had a real job. This is their career. This is their job, sucking off the federal tit, sucking off of your hard work. And masking it with as much lying as they can possibly do. Either the Democrat style, and all Democrat versus Republican had become was a difference in style of lying. There was the Democrat style of lying and the Republican style of filthy lying. But Donald Trump has changed all of that, and he's fighting the same two battles that we've been talking about on this show since 2015. Can you believe that? That's right. I was just a boy in knee pants when we began this show. Now I'm 75. How did that happen? His first battle is not actually against the communists of the Democrat Party. His first battle, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, is against the rhinos, the Bush, the Bushies, the Romneyites, like Ronna. They don't say Ronna Romney McDaniel. I love the people who call her Ronna McRomney. Not McDaniel, McRomney. And I'll tell you what, you know, we can all be hoodwinked. Not the least me. I was hoodwinked by Ronna McRomney. I actually kind of really out of wishful thinking thought, oh, she's quite different from her uncle, Mitt. No, she's not. She's exactly the same thing. The latest episode, you know, the latest installment of this. This was Trump's first battle, is to fight these people. He's fighting them now, today, against Mike McJohnson. Mike Johnson, another rhino, who, once he assumes power, in the early stages of the drama, these rhinos conceal themselves. They camouflage themselves. They deceive us in order to wheedle their way into power. Once they get into a really strong position where they can then pivot, turn on us, and start firing away with their communist crap. And that's what Mike Johnson's doing, has been doing every day that he has been Speaker of the House. He's worse than the worst. He's worse than Kevin McCarthy. So anyway, we might talk about that at some point. But let's get with the president here, who's... And then his second battle is against the Democrat Party itself. He has to fight both of these battles. He has to win both of these battles. And he has to win big, because while all of this is happening, the Romneyites and the Chuck U Schumers are still installing themselves everywhere from school boards all the way to Senate seats, and they continue their dirty, nasty guerrilla warfare against Donald Trump at every level, all the time. So he has to, even when he wins the White House, which I think he will do, but I am so encouraged by recent developments. I think Donald Trump will win on November blank, I forgot the day. What is it? November 5th, coming up in 2024. He will win. And I think he will win in the Electoral College. And the next stage of the battle begins. He has to fight these people who hopefully Donald Trump will be able to detect them and cleanse the Aegean stables of people like Bill Barr and the rest of them, the Democrats in who pretend to be Republicans. Let me just check now. I have a number of computers in front of me here. Let me take this call from Dr. Kelly in Northern California. Hi, Dr. Kelly.
How's it going?
I'm really, really pleased with our chances to save the Republic, save our lives, actually, and more importantly, the lives of our children and our descendants and our civilization. That's what I'm really concerned about. I'm 75. I'm not that concerned about the happiness or comfort of my remaining time in the mortal coil. But I am very worried about my descendants and about my civilization. So I'm very encouraged, to answer your question, in my usual radio host verbose way, I'm very encouraged by recent developments, but obviously, it's never looked more dark for Western civilization. Never. Never has Western civilization looked to be closer to the edge of a bottomless pit of disappearance. Now, I'm just saying this for the first time, but I'm thinking a little as I say this. Am I exaggerating a little bit? Let me just think. Is this the worst moment in the entire history of Western civilization, going as far back as we can go, going back to Herodotus, going back to Aristotle? Was it ever this bad? And I don't think, in the time of Aristotle, 400 BC, I don't think we were looking at the imminent demise of Western civilization, as bad as the Persians were, as bad as Darius and Xerxes were. They weren't marching on Paris. They weren't storming London. I don't think in the entire history have we faced a moment where, and by the way, the extinction of Western civilization is going on simultaneously in all those places. In Paris, there are plenty of no-go zones in every big city in the Western civilization. No-go zones.
They've got to hire extra cops for the Olympics this summer.
Oh, in Paris, yes. But the entire, all of our cities, London, Paris, Madrid, Berlin.
King's Beach.
Rome.
King's Beach.
We don't we don't have our cities, and
that's
you
right.
Can't survive on that basis. The civilization, there was a time, when our cities were our great centers. So if you were
San Francisco,
if you wanted to do
the greatest city on earth, used to be
San Francisco was a wonderful place. And
Detroit.
If you wanted to do what we used to call the tour, I did that as a teenager. The tour was you pick your route and you go around as an American whose ancestors all came from Europe. You go around a tour of Europe. You want to see Paris, and you want to see Madrid and London, and you must go to Amsterdam, and Munich and Rotterdam and Amsterdam and Copenhagen. You have to go to all those places, and Stockholm. You want to go there.
Oslo.
Yeah, I didn't make it to Oslo, but I made it to all those other places. And they were wonderful. Now, you say, wait a minute, Kelso, what are you talking about? I'm talking about 1966, boys and girls, and 1965. They were wonderful. You
when
could
did
sit
you
on
run
a
park. Into Mittens Romney?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I've told that story, but yes, I did run into Mittens Romney on a train as an 18-year-old. He was serving his 2-year missionary time as a Latter-day Saint. Jesus Christ, Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, and he made his pitch. We had a wonderful conversation, but only later did I realize I was talking to Mitt Romney. But at that time, there was no danger of any kind. I'll talk about it a little bit right after the break. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
It'll still last 10 years like the show. Best of the free life is still yet to come. The good times ain't over for good.
I I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian. And my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Wish a buck was still silver. It was back when the country was strong. Back before Elvis and before the Vietnam War came along. Before the Beatles and yesterday, when a man could still work, still would. The best of the free life behind us now, and are the good times really over for good? And are we rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell? Kind of chance for the flag or the Liberty Bell. I wish a Ford and a Chevy would still last 10 years
like they should. We're back, folks. And Dr. Kelly is with us from California.
Yeah, and I got my 1990 Ford Bronco 2. Still lasts like it should.
I'm sorry, we miss Merle. We need Merle back. But we have all his songs, and we have his spirit in us. The But we have to raise up generations to follow Merle Haggard that are as brilliant and as patriotic as he was. And you know, this is the going back to my initial answer, that the dire straits that our civilization is in. We've never been closer to the edge of disappearing. And all these, I was talking about the tour of Europe. When I was a teenager, here I am, I'm 75 years old. When I was a teenager, I mean, that's like more than half a century ago, a lot more than half a century ago. I never thought I'd, you know, be this old. I never sort of looked poor. How could it happen to me? Getting old happens to old people, not to a teenager like me. I'm never going to get old.
If you knew it was going to last this long, you would have taken better care of it.
Well, I mean, all kinds of things. Yeah. What did John Keats say? John Keats said, not John Keats. It was John Greenleaf Whittier. I've got a first edition version of his poem. I'll get it and read it. I put it in my library for my children. But of all the words, I don't want to misquote John Greenleaf Whittier. Who's our ancestor? We're cousins to John Greenleaf Whittier. But anyway, it might have been. It's the poem in which he says that the hardest phrase, it was what might have been. But so here I am, and all these places that I went. Let me tell you, all you youngins out there seated around the campfire. When I was 18 years old, I was hitchhiking around Europe. And what did that mean? Okay, now I sound like I'm cuckoo to have done what I was doing, but it was common. But lots of us did it. There was nothing particularly remarkable about it. A little bit avant-garde. But I would simply, my base was Paris. That was where I spent more time than any other city in Europe, and that's where I learned to speak very good French, and so much so that I could fool people that I was actually French on the road. I could hop in the car of a Frenchman, and he'd go, you know, "Êtes-vous français? Are you French?" And but then I branched out. I did the tour. I went all over Europe, to London, to Stockholm, to Amsterdam, to Madrid, you know, to Marseille, and to Geneva. Went all over Europe, and through the back roads, and and I never was in danger for one second, not for in any way, shape, or form. It didn't matter whether I was at night on the road, in the rain. It didn't matter whether I had, and there were plenty of times. I mean, this is the foolishness of a teenager. You know, youth is wasted on the young. I had plenty of times when I was in Europe, and I had $5 to my name. That's it. There were times when, like, I would, but it was all wonderful. There were all friendly people everywhere. I never actually ever had to ask anybody for anything, like, you know, food or a meal. And they just offered it, a place to sleep. But I was hitchhiking all over Europe. And what did that mean? This may be mind-boggling to you young people listening here. I would take whatever the bus service was, or the train, or the metro, or whatever any city had, to the outskirts, to the last stop on the train, and get out with my rucksack. That's all I had, a rucksack. And I'd have like two or three shirts and two or three pairs of underwear. And I'll continue in a moment what life was like in 1966. We'll be right back.
Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well, grabbed a sagging timber and gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone, Big John. Big John.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us, What has happened for them since starting Extendivite? Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123 at gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
And we're back, folks. And let me take you on this tour of my childhood, in my youth, and what America was like. So I would get off at the outermost ring of any city in Europe, and I always had a map. I was big on maps. Never stopped. It's never stopped for me. I am big on maps. So I'd have a map in my rucksack, and I'd take that out. So I'd position myself on the highway, the main road, leaving the town like Paris, the road that headed where I wanted to go. So let's say I wanted to go to Bordeaux. I would I'd head out on the way towards Poitiers, and then from Poitiers, But I would simply stand out on the road. Now get this. You got to absorb this, how things have changed. I'm not a big person. I'm not imposing. You would describe me as just slightly below average height for a man. I've never been in a fight in my life. I've never been in a fist fight, nothing. So I'm not a frightening person. I'm not intimidating. So that doesn't make me safe. And I would stand by the road, stick out my thumb, always my right thumb, and hang it out there, and I wouldn't have to wait very long. And by the way, I would do this day, or I mean, preferred day, of course. But when occasion required, I would hitchhike at night, trying to be under some kind of a light or something so I could be seen. I didn't have to have big signs, you know, I'm going this way, or I didn't have to beg people and so on. I just stood by the side of the road, and whether they were French or Spanish or Dutch or Belgian or Swedish or Danes or Germans, Italians, it didn't matter. They would just pull over. The Frenchmen would pull over in their little Citroën car, those weird little cars, and just invite me in and drive me, you know. And so often they drive beyond where they actually were going when they found out I was going towards, you know, Poitiers. They didn't want to go that far. They'd go an extra 10 or 20 miles just to help me out. And they would invite me. They would say, you know, have you had lunch, whatever. If it was getting dark, they'd say, well, where are you staying tonight? And I'd say, well, and this is true. Now, get this, folks. I wouldn't know. I didn't know where I was staying. I didn't have hotel arrangements. Let me think. Did I ever stay in a hotel in all the time I was in Europe? Which was years. Years. This isn't like a two-week jaunt. I was there for several years. I haven't thought about it till this moment on the radio here, relating this to you, my descendants. I never stayed in a hotel. Well, wait a minute. Well, I might have once or twice when I was with somebody else. But generally, I did not stay in any kind of a hotel. They had a thing called Auberge de Jeunesse, which were youth hostels. And I would, on my map, I'd mark and circle. There was an Auberge de Jeunesse somewhere, a youth hostel, wherever it was in Europe. And I'd stay there for pennies, folks, under a dollar. I'd sleep the night there and, you know, but and it was wonderful. And it was full of, you know, got into the Auberge de Jeunesse, there'd be Germans hitchhiking, just like you. Germans hitchhiking around Europe, and, you know, Swedes were all over Europe. And, it was wonderful. And I had a base in Paris where I was, in fact, paying pennies again for a little loft hotel room. Just a tiny, tiny little thing, didn't have a bathroom, just a tiny little single room with a sink in it. And on that floor was a bathroom for those three or four of us that were on that floor, under the roof of an old Paris, you know, just like something you'd see out of Tale of Two Cities. And I don't remember what it was, but I was paying something like, you know, under $2 a day, I think. And that was kind of my secret. It was inexpensive to be all over Europe. It was utterly safe. Okay, in several years of time, I never had one frightening moment ever in all that time in Europe. I was never harassed, so that crime never happened, nothing. And I didn't take any particular precautions. I was never armed. I never carried any kind of a weapon with me or something. I never had to defend myself or yell at somebody like, hey, let me out of here. I never was harassed by police, French, German, Spanish, English. They only were helpful, and very helpful, by the way. And I could tell you incredible stories about how helpful the police were to a young American kid who wanted to take the tour and see Europe. And, you know, to me, it was, you know, I'd heard about the Prado Museum in Madrid. So I spent weeks in there, and the Louvre in Paris, and the Tate Gallery in London, the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. I wanted to see the Pont du Gard, which is this Roman aqueduct built in the first century AD, an incredible aqueduct that carried, you know, an estimated 11 million gallons of water a day to the city, the Roman city of Nîmes in southern France. And you just stand there in awe when you get out to the Pont du Gard. It takes you back. It still takes me back to Roman civilization. Our people, our ancestors built this incredible aqueduct. It's like three tiers tall. It's 100 and I just looked it up again. It's 160 feet high. It's mind-boggling. But you know, I wanted to, and that was life for a dopey American kid in 1965 and 1966. And look where we've come now. So, and I was always in those, you know, every big city was totally safe, was totally fun, totally wonderful, totally filled with the monuments and the, you know, the riches of Western civilization. You could just wander the streets of Paris or London or anywhere. And, you know, at every turn, there was some wonderful part of our history that I'd read about or heard about. And that was the Wanderlust that I had. You know, what was I doing? What kind of tolerant people were my parents that they let me do that? Why didn't my father put his foot down and say, "You are son, you are not doing this"? But he didn't. He let me go off and wander around Europe, and he was very responsible, very successful member of the greatest generation, a guy who'd been in the U.S. Air Force in World War II, and was a super achiever and so on. And here I'm his oldest son, his namesake, you know, and he lets me, you know, and I so wish he were still around that I could apologize to him and, you know, commiserate with him about his son who went off to Europe like that.
Dude, what about your bicycle ride up the coast?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't want to go into all that stuff, but I just want to, that's another one Dr. Kelly said, you know, in the same era, 1965, 66, 67, 68, I would, in the United States, I rode bicycles, just cheap, you know, 12-speed bicycles. I rode one from the Pacific Palisades, which is, you can think Santa Monica, you know that better, all the way up the Coast Highway to San Francisco with a buddy of mine. And you know, it was safe to do that, riding on the shoulder of the Coast Highway, which is technically illegal. But people were wonderful. The police were wonderful. One policeman stopped us in San Luis Obispo, or was it Obispo? Anyway, he pulled up, and he said, you know, young fellas, what are you doing, and so on. We were 18, 19 years old, maybe 17, actually. I think it was before I went to Europe, 17. And he said, what, you know, and we told him we're riding bicycles from Southern California to Northern California. And he said, well, where are you going to stay tonight? He said, well, we don't know. We got sleeping bags. He goes, kids, look, young men. He actually drove us onto an abandoned military base near San Luis Obispo and put us in the army barracks so we'd have a dry place to sleep and warm in you know, that's what the kind of thing the police did. Give you another example of how friendly the world was back then. I had completely run out of money by the time I was in the Netherlands. And I was kind of the end of my rope in terms of, you know, getting some, you know, food, you know, and stuff like this. And so, well, not really. I could have kept going. But thankfully, a Dutch policeman, said, well, what, you know, just wanted to interview me in a park in, where was I? I think I was in Rotterdam. And then he goes, well, wait a minute. He looked at my passport and, you know, and so on. He realized, he said, how much money do you have? I didn't have, you know, $5 to $10. Where are you staying? I didn't know. And so on. And here's what he did. This is what the police used to be like. He made some phone calls, took me in his squad car, made some phone calls, and dropped me off at the dock in Rotterdam and said, I have arranged for you, I have arranged a ship on which you will be taken aboard as a crewman to travel from Rotterdam to Long Beach, to L.A., through the Panama Canal. And I said, you're kidding. He said, no, I have arranged this with the captain. I called the captain. It's okay. And I said, this is all completely, you know, the captain's winging it, the policeman's winging it. And that ship, as I'm 18 years old, that ship took me across the Atlantic, through the Panama Canal, drop me off in Long Beach, California, where the captain at in Long Beach, California, called my dad, who drove his Mercedes down to the ship to pick up his, what does the Bible call me? Prodigal son.
The vagabond.
The prodigal son. And, that's how wonderful the world used to be. And so you see, there's a special sting to the present times for old folks like me, old folks like Donald Trump.
Obo,
you know, when
Kelso.
I was eight. Huh?
Hobo. Kelso.
But not hobo. Not hobo. Not at all.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, I was neat as a pin. And I was, you know, I'd be sitting there. I spent days and weeks staring at the Mona Lisa in the Louvre Museum. I showed when it opened, I was there, and I only left when the guards chased everybody out, or walked everybody out of the museum. They swept the museum. And all those other, here's another story. You know, all of us, you know, we've heard of Notre Dame, you know, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and so on. I as an 18-year-old kid, silly kid, I would go over to Notre Dame, walk over to Notre Dame, and, oh my God, you know, and it's gone now. It's gone. The rose window, the beautiful, God, the stained glass, I would stare at it for hour upon hour. The vaulted arches, the incredible spires, but the two towers, one of the towers, you could walk all the way up to the top of the tower in a staircase. Just walk. There are no elevators. You walk all the way to the top. And it was free. You just walk in and then walk all the way to the top of Notre Dame. And then you go to the top, just to show you, this illustrates to you young folks how safe it was, how innocent the world was, how Western the world was, how civilized we were. You could walk to the top, as I did many, many times. I mean, scores of times. I loved it so much. I would walk to the top of Notre Dame, and you could just walk around on top all by yourself. You'd be the only person up there. You'd be like Quasimodo, the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I walked around up there, and the view of Paris, unbelievable, wonderful view all over the Seine River and so on. And then here's a little anecdote of it. You know, silly 18-year-old up there on top of a 19-year-old on top of the greatest cathedral on earth, Notre Dame, the most beautiful monument to our civilization. And the roof up there is made of lead, which all these old buildings in the hotel I lived in, the roof was made of lead. And so I would just hoist myself up, skinny 18-year-old, I'd hoist myself up on the lead kind of angled roof at the top of that tower of Notre Dame. I mean, it's right there. You just, you know, lift yourself up and, you know, you relax on the angled roof there. And I took out my pocket knife. And this is silly, isn't it? But I like kind of wanting to leave a mark, which is now this is what I want to do with this show and with my life. Leave a mark on my civilization that I was here, that I at least made an effort. I tried. I did something for our people. And so, and I'm just recalling this now. I took out my pocket knife, and lead is very soft, folks. And you can cut it with your pocket knife. You can carve it. I carved my initials, J.K. I carved them into the roof of Notre Dame. I mean, not little scratches. I mean, I carved out lead. So they would never go away until they replaced that lead roof, which would be never. I'll bet you that lead roof was still there when Notre Dame burned. How long ago was it, Dr. Kelly? A couple of years ago?
I don't have a clue. I apologize.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a couple of years ago.
Interpol is waiting at the door now for you.
Yeah, okay. Well, no. Anyway, so I'll bet you my initials burned as that lead melted in the towers of Notre Dame. And there's so many people who said, you know, when Notre Dame, for some people, there's a video now that's gone viral out on the web of Steve Bannon uses it as a theme music for his show. A woman made a video about the Knights Templar, the heroic Europeans of long ago, returning back like ghost riders in the sky, furious at the burning of Notre Dame, and then a sacrilege. The pathetic French government of Emmanuel Macron. What a worm! What a jellyfish! Emmanuel Macron, married to a woman who's like 20 years older than he is. He's a total weirdo. He wants to bomb Russia. He wants to send the French army into Russia. And he wants to start World War III. We are led by insane monsters. And that's what Donald Trump is fighting, insane monsters. And I'll tell you what, you know, I talked about, you know, I've gone on a carnivore diet and stuff. Why do I say it? Talk about that? I want to live for a couple more decades because I want to see this through. You know, I don't want to be wondering, you know, when my last sigh is Western civilization going to live or die. I want to know that it's going to live. I want to know that we will have fought the crucial battle. You know, the Battle of Poitiers that Charles Martel fought. You know, what was the year of Charles Martel? It was like something like 700 something. But Charles Martel fought that, and I went to see that in Poitiers. He fought the Arab invaders and beat them. And that was a turning point where Western civilization was saved from the Muslim attack, which was everywhere. You know, it was in Greece, it was in Spain, it was on the every coast of the Mediterranean. Muslim pirate ships were kidnapping millions of white people and hauling them off. Did you know this? They won't teach you this. Children out there in school, you will not be taught this in school. This is utterly verboten. The towns all along the northern shore of the Mediterranean were ghost towns. You know why? Nobody dared to live on the shore of the Mediterranean because Arab ships would depart from North Africa, in the Middle East, and cruise along the shore, grabbing white children, grabbing white girls, dragging them onto their ships, never to be seen again.
Yeah, you're talking about the Moors, M-O-O-R, right?
Well, yes. Yes, the Moors is one name for them, but they're they were all Muslim, and they were all they wished only death to Western Christian civilization, that battle where Charles Martel fought at Poitiers and turned them back and beat them. That's the kind of moment we're in now, where we have to find our Charles Martel. And actually, I've got a good nominee. His name is Donald John Trump. He is our Charles Martel. Martel in French, the hammer. Charles the hammer is what Martel means in French.
Oh, yes.
Marteau. And so he is, that is, just, I want you to take those anecdotes, folks, you know, for years, and as an American from a very, you know, upscale, you know, Palisades High School, it doesn't get any fancier than that. The house I grew up in was a middle class house, we thought at the time. My dad paid $25,000 for it. That very same house, you can look it up on Zillow right now, $7 million. The same house I grew up in. So in other words, no, I wasn't a hobo. I was from, a very famous, prestigious community and town. But it was safe to just wander around America or Europe or anyway. And what is that? What is America and Europe? It wasn't safe to wander around Africa. The Rockefeller boy found out about how safe it was to wander around New Guinea. They ate him. They cut him up and ate him. So wrong place to hitchhike around in New Guinea. I don't mean to make fun of the Rockefeller family, but they lost one of their Rockefellers. He was eaten alive by the savages. So it wasn't safe to wander around anywhere in the world. And I'm pissed at Jesse Ventura, who'll get on the media and he'll wax lyrical about Mexico because he loves to surf in Mexico.
Yeah.
And then he keeps going on how it's safe. It's safe down in Mexico. Bullshit, Jesse Ventura.
Oh, Belko.
It's not safe. And you know it, you liar. And I met him.
Yeah,
I met Jesse Ventura in St. Paul, Minnesota, where he was the governor.
Yeah.
And I got to talk to him. I should have. I didn't know that he was spouting that kind of nonsense. This was back in 2008.
That Mexico. They know him from Predator. You know, they know him, buff dude. Who's going to mess with him? Nobody ever messed with me in Mexico either. The cops would look the other way. They're like, look at that.
That was then. That was then. This is now. You can forget about the bravado. They will mess with you now. And the problem is they're going to mess with you in Lake Tahoe now because those cartels are here now. And we are they operate in a whole different universe. Jesse Ventura, very rich, millions of dollars. I'm sure his surf camp and wherever it is on the, beautiful coast there, western coast of Mexico. I'm sure that that's, a little enclave of rich white Americans who, have an escape in Mexico. That's not Mexico.
Iron Gates.
yeah. So he's a liar. Mexico is not safe. And nowhere. My point being this, folks, we were so blessed to be born in this country. Anywhere in Europe, Denmark, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, Scotland, America, Canada. There's a name for this. This is white European civilization. And we are a distinct minority of the world. If there are approximately 8 billion people on Earth, there can't even be 800 million of us. We're at best one-tenth of the world. We're a distinct minority. But now, incredibly, the demon rats, the communists, realizing this is our Achilles heel, is immigration. That is our Achilles heel. And with that Achilles heel, they can end Western civilization in a way that socialism could never do it. Even communism could not do it. Russia survived communism. We aren't surviving this hour. We got to go. So,
hey, thank you, Kelso.
Hey, that was a trip down memory lane. We'll
be
back
for
more memory lane tomorrow night. Right here at the Trump Phenomenon. See you then. So, thank you, Dr. Kelly. So long.
Don't stop believing.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.